Financial planner Dave Petzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzo.
Hello and good morning. You know, it's interesting. I'm hearing this question more. Maybe, I don't know if I'm tuned in more. I'm not sure. But it's phrased in a couple of different ways. It's phrased, you know, stocks are down this week. You know, it's like, okay, 1 week. In other words, we're worried about, right? You know, market's been great. Well, but not this week. This week. Or, you know, stocks are acting about it kind of jumpy, you know, really sketchy or some verbiage like that. And it's really in the context, like, I'm kind of nervous, right? I mean, I don't like what's going on here. And I think we often have to just stop and go, no, really, come on. Markets don't go straight up. They really don't. And at times they act sketchy, pull back for a few weeks before they go higher. Or, you know, they just kind of bounce around and move sideways, maybe drifting up or down just a little bit as they seem to rest or do nothing for a while. Even in a good market, it just doesn't go up every day. It's not certain to. Everything doesn't look perfect every day. But I think part of that is what we talk about all the time, and that is how hard it is to own stocks in a world that magnifies every single little problem in the world. Little problem, big problem, doesn't matter. Let's put it under a magnifying glass. Talk about it 20 ways to Sunday, about how it really is worse than we think. Things really are that bad. You probably should, you know, step to the sidelines. You probably shouldn't own the great corporations of the world right now. We'll be able to zip back in later, but right now you don't want to own the great corporations of the world. And I got thinking about that, and I thought, you know, I've said this a lot, but I really came back to this in thinking about my own great holdings. They're not all great, but some of the companies that I have are really up a lot. I mean, massive amounts, to the point where I've had to sell some just to right-size it again. And I got to thinking about it. I thought, well, why is that? You know, look at those. Wow. And you realize, because those were the companies that I owned. I just said, I want to own Apple. I don't want to trade Apple. I'm not much of a trader anyway, but my point is that I bought Apple to just own it. I don't look at every day and wonder, oh my gosh, is it up a dollar? Is it down a dollar? Don't even think about it. Especially since they started paying a dividend and raising it and buying back stock. It just turned into this giant cash flow machine. What do they have? Free cash flow of like $40 billion this year? $40 billion of free cash flow. It's ridiculous. That's just amazing. And I it's a pretty good problem to have. And now analysts are all worried about with Apple, or some are anyway, that they have so much free cash flow they can't grow as fast. Okay, all right, yeah, that's just a massive problem, isn't it? I don't even know what I would do if I happen to have too much free cash flow. They would do terrible things like, you know, buy back stock, raise dividends, which is what they're doing. But that's not how it's reported. It's not a positive or a great thing. It's usually positioned that they just can't grow as much. Or the Apple needs to go buy somebody. It should buy Yahoo, or they should do this, they should do that. You know what? Apple can do what they need to do. I'm going to own this amazing cash flow machine. That's what I'm going to do until there's evidence to the contrary, that I shouldn't worry about whether it's ahead of itself or the iPhone 6 is exactly what people should get. That's not owning a company. That's trading a company. You need to watch your companies because you don't want to own them forever. And a good example of that would be Microsoft. You didn't want to own that forever. It laid down and played dead. Actually went down and stayed down for a long, 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 more than a decade. There are times. Now, you know, obviously Microsoft's making a nice comeback now, but there are times when companies do change. And you don't want to own them or as much of them as you once did. But you know what? You don't get multi-baggers trading. And the old adage of on Wall Street that, you know, you you won't go broke taking profits. And actually, that's not true. You will go broke taking profits. And here's why. Because you won't always have profits. You see, you don't always get to win. Nobody does. Nobody always wins. So you see, if you have your great investments, right? You've got incredible companies that you own. And you cut them short because you've got, you know, you have the bug to trade, right? You got a little bit of a gambling mentality, if you will. I don't care if you gamble. Don't gamble with your investments. Don't gamble in the market. You feel itchy to trade. And so you pop it out of there and you don't own the great corporation. Or another little shiny object goes in front of you and you stop owning one to go chase another. You will go broke because you have to have the multi-baggers. Peter Lynch talked about it. Every great investor has to have some 10-baggers is what he said. Huh. You know why? Because you're going to not always win, and we got to cover them up. And the only way to have a 10-bagger is if you're owning great companies for long periods of time. It's true. So as you look at this, and we see the market being skittish or skanky, however people want to talk about it, it's okay. It's resting. And there's some real problems in the world. Growth is terrible. And we look to Washington, D.C. in a time of war, if you will, and you've got a president that doesn't know if we're at war or are we not at war. What we're going to do is we're going to do a red line. No, we're not. We're not going to put troops in. We're only going to, you know, lob over a couple things like we do in Libya. What? What did they have, like, you know, 2-3 strikes the whole year last year? But we're going to get rid of all of ISIS. But we're not going to go in. We're good. Really, just decide. We need some real leadership. But where is he? Playing golf and at a fundraiser. Seriously. What he does. So instead of leading, we feel really like we're vulnerable. I get that. We feel very vulnerable. Again. So the vigilance of worrying about terrorists in the world and going and getting the bad guys where they are, maybe we're not. And what's going on with Russia? Why would they believe the president would do anything? They don't. He won't. They know. He won't. So we've got a world that feels quite out of control geopolitically. That's problematic. We've got our interest rates going to go up. Are they going up? All we do is talk about the Fed. That's all they have to do. Why? Because the market, frankly, is pretty dull. And so all we do is nanner about the Fed. I wonder if rates going to go up. When the data says they should. Probably. Oh, yeah, that's what they say. Every time. But they think you can game it. So as the Fed began to taper, we knew the interest rates would rise, and, of course, they went down. So we know now what we know, and this is one that's really, this one's a tough one for me because I really think the U.S. dollar is going to keep strengthening. I really do. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't. So I'm probably right. It probably will short term, but I don't want to overly bet that simplistic thing. Why? Because everybody knows it. So what everybody knows isn't worth knowing because it's already priced in, as you know, which is my Ten Commandments number one. Whatever I know isn't worth knowing. So I know the U.S. dollar is going up. So it isn't, is it? Because it's, or it's priced in. Is there much movement up from here? We know you can't buy Europe because the euro is weakening and it's weakening economically, and so you need to do what? There's great bargains in Europe. You need to go buy Europe. So we have to be careful with what we think we know and what we're so sure of. But with the dollar continuing to rally, and it's 9 weeks in a row, 9 weeks in a row. By the way, it's something like 15 years or something, 17 years since the dollar's rallied 9 weeks in a row. That's a long haul. That's a big move. That's not a little thing. In fact, the dollar index is up 17% since 2011. That's a big move. Oil prices are coming down because of it. It's good for retailers. And we, as we talked last week, there's lots of winners and losers in the dollar movements. But it's predominantly good to be strong. It is. You think strong is good. Strong dollar, good. Yes. It is. But obviously, the multinational companies trading all around the world, it makes the value of their products a little bit more expensive. Yes, they hedge and things like that, but yeah, sales will be down a little bit on the global multinationals. But it's good, since oil is traded in dollars, to have a strong dollar. It's less expensive. Goody gumdrops should have better oil prices, therefore better gasoline prices. Maybe people will show up at the stores again. Retailing typically does better. All right, so those are some things for what the dollar is doing. But I am concerned because it seems so certain, right? It seems so certain what we should be doing. So we have to, when we're looking at all of this noise that's bouncing around, trading in dollars, should it be in Europe, should it be here, should it be there? Now, on a short-term basis, yeah, okay, you can overweight and underweight some stuff, but the reality is, as I look at my portfolio, as I think about the great investors and the basic principles, what I really come back to and what I know is true is that you need to invest and own the great corporations of the world, not trade them. Own them. And if they keep doing good, a great job, staying ahead in whatever industry they're in, I really wouldn't worry about P.E. ratios, shiny new companies coming along, unless they really deserve your attention. Then buy them too. But trading out is not certainly not the way to wealth. It's certainly not the way to comfort. If you like the gambling mentality of it, okay, but boy, that's dangerous. And not recommended. It's better tax-wise. It's better trading cost-wise. It's better every-wise. And all the greats got it and did it. They own the great corporations of the world. They didn't trade them. You go and you buy Apple, and you own it. You go out and you buy Google, and you own it. If you can, you wait for a pullback in a company like Facebook, and you own it. Is it too expensive? Probably. And you can pay too much, so you got to get these things at a reasonable price level, yes. But you don't have to sell them. I haven't sold my Facebook. It's high. But they're just killing it. It deserves to be high. You don't have to trade it. Because when you trade out, you may never get back in. Was Google expensive when they IPO'd? Yeah, they were. At, what is it, split adjusted? $40 a share? Yeah, they're $500 now. Were they expensive at $160? Not at the growth rate they were at. And remember, you don't have to catch them early. This is the key. There are lots of old companies out there. I was just looking at, we were talking at our office like we do all the time. What can we buy? I mean, everything is up. It's doing so good. Everything is there any, are there any bargains out there? You know, and so we're always doing, and once in a while, somebody will pop in and go, hey, what about, you know, XYZ? And I don't want to name the company, okay, because you just shouldn't, because I'm not suggesting you go buy this company. We're starting to nibble at it, and everybody hates it. So let me just say, it's a company that everybody knows is going to make less money next year than they are this year. Their debt is just, it's just tiny. The amount of cash they have is huge. They pay a 3% dividend in the last 10 years. They've raised it every year. I don't know how far back they've raised it beyond that, but 10 years was good enough as a check for me. They've been through recessions. It's a bit of a cyclical business. And it went through 2008. Sales just collapsed, just were crushing. And they continue to be cash flow positive. In other words, they're a really safe blue chip company. Very dominant. Been around for decades. Everybody hates them. There's like two analysts out of 25, I'm not joking, that have them rated as a buy. Everybody else is hold, which usually hold or sell. Hold is mean sell. Sell usually means short. I mean, that's the rating on it. Nobody thinks the stock can go up. In other words, relatively speaking, it can hardly be hated more. And so that's why it got our attention. And so these are the kind of companies that once in a while will pop up. They don't have to be new shiny. And they can be great businesses. And they can be down on their luck. Down in the cycle. That's when we like to buy them, when they're cheap. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Our email address is dave@petsofinancial.net. Love to talk with you. Need to talk with you. Love to have some phone calls this week, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, that's the phone number here, and we'd love to talk with you. Also, if you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. All right, let's go ahead and go to the phones. Let's go to Jim in Boise. Jim, thanks for calling.
Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Once again, I shall prime the pump.
That's right.
And a great day for football, starting with BSU. And, you know, there's lots of good football games today if people like football.
Mm-hmm.
College.
Yes. Well, anyway, who doesn't like college football? There's something wrong with people that don't like college football.
I know. The sad thing about college football is they professionalized it.
I know.
I don't like professional football, and I don't like the professional aspect of college football.
Yep. I know. Times are changing.
You know, one interesting little remark on that really, really quick. This guy, Peterson, you know, now they got him for switching a kid, I guess, with a branch of a tree or whatever.
Oh, yeah?
Well, interesting. You know, I remember when I was a kid, and my grandparents had a willow tree. And that willow tree had a reputation, you know. Peterson probably did exactly what my grandparents and parents did to me, and somehow or other I survived. But
I know.
You know. But anyway, I mean, I guess good advice as far as, you know, buying and not trading, holding, getting a good corporation. And
yeah.
Just, you know, when it goes up, people think about selling it. When they go down, when it goes down, they worry about it, and ridiculous.
Yeah, it is, and again, it's a different mentality of what it is you own. What do we own? You own a piece of a business. Nobody trades businesses, but they'll trade pieces of paper.
True. Well, it's like I live in my house. I don't think about what it's worth. To me, it's worth a place to reside.
Exactly.
You know, and so, I don't know, get a good... What was that company you were talking about right before the break? I kind of missed the name of it.
I didn't give it.
Oh, really?
I wasn't trying to tout a company. Yeah.
You were saying whatever it was, it was down. Analysts didn't like it.
That's right.
But you thought it was good. I just wondered.
Yeah, you know, I don't want people to go out and buy stuff. We're not here to tell people to buy, and sell. But here's an example, and I will tell you since you asked. It was Deere.
Deere,
yeah. Oh.
Well, I got Deere a while back, 50 shares.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't, whatever. I mean, Deere hadn't done great, but it's still a good company, and I'm not going to sell it.
Right, and they've been raising the dividend. The cash flow looks great. Their balance sheet is phenomenal. And, yes, everybody already knows. So you see, we're reversing our thought process, right? What I know isn't worth knowing because collectively it's already priced in. So having the factual statement that everybody knows the company's all not going to make it more – or is going to make less money next year. I didn't say they're going to lose money, but everybody – and maybe they will – but they're going to make gobs of money, but less than this year. But everybody already knows it, so it's already priced in. So it's hard to find a stock that's more hated than that one in this world today.
Well, you know what's interesting, and I do keep a real close track of my investments. I love to do that. But I've also got 50 shares of Caterpillar. Now, Caterpillar and Deere are related equipment-wise, right?
Well, some. Now, you know, Deere is really obviously on the farm much more, and Cat is in the mines and construction.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, differently related. But what's interesting is the last time they both raised their dividend, one 17% and one 16%.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of an interesting correlation, you know?
Yeah. No. And if you, like I said, you go back and these companies have raised their dividends very, very consistently over time. So, yep.
Yep. But anyway, I mean, in my life, no news is good news. And like you say, I mean, when people get spoiled and think that the market has got to go up every week, maybe they shouldn't be in the market.
No, they need to be in the market. We just have to learn to deal with it. There's no other place to be. It's where the wealth is built. You just got to learn to do it. It's kind of like you got to eat your vegetables.
I know. Saying that is anathema to you.
I know.
Well, you know.
I heard you giggle. I knew you were just giggling because get me all fired up.
If people... Well, it's like, you know, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. You know, if it's going to tear you up, whatever. I mean, you know. I mean, the thing is, you know, you buy, you invest, you try to accumulate wealth, and eventually you die. So you may die young, die old, you know, and then money's not much good to anybody. Maybe your descendants.
That's all it is. And that's why owning the companies, when we can get people to think that way, owning the companies... Taking an income to live on all the days of your life, it doesn't matter what it's worth. In the end, it's going to be worth more than when you bought it, but your heirs are going to spend it.
Yep. And hopefully they'll do it wisely.
You hope so. But yeah, some will and some won't. Jim, there's a bumper sticker for you.
Yeah, you can't worry about that either.
You can't. Can't govern from the grave.
So, nope.
All right.
Well, take care. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jim. You have a great day, and go Broncos, right?
Yeah, and other people call in.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And our number is 580-543-6, 580-KIDO. We have to take a quick break here for Fox News. And when we come back, we do want your phone calls. We need your phone calls. Or shoot us an email, dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. IDO, Idaho's place to talk.
welcome and thanks for joining us. Now, do join us on the phone. That would be great if you would at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, it's interesting. I look at these, interesting little tidbits that can show you how statistics can lie and liars use statistics and all that stuff. And we often look at that. I know. But let me switch this around. Here's an interesting point as we take a look at and try to understand how much can you withdraw from your pile of money in retirement? How much can you withdraw? What percentage can you take out? And when you stop and you look at it and you go, well, that depends. It always depends. You look at it and you go, well, you know, the market's done 10%. And, of course, our linear brain, how do we think? We think 10 every year. I'm going to talk about in the education segment how it not only doesn't do 10 every year, it doesn't do anywhere near 10. I'm going to talk about that in regards to the continuing questions that I have all the time regarding, well, why not, an equity index annuity? Why not one of those annuities that you get all of the market returns with no risk? Why can't I do that? Yeah, okay. Well, and pigs fly and you can buy a bridge if you believe all that. But I'll specifically attempt, in word pictures, an incredibly complex thing. But part of that is in regards to this market question. Well, it depends how much you can take out, because it depends when you retire. In 1973, if you had $1 million invested in the S&P 500 and you wanted to take out $100,000 a year, you were out 9 years. Done. $100,000 inflation-adjusted dollars, you were out 9 years. Didn't work out real good unless you died real fast. However, if you took it out in 82, beginning in 82, after 32 years, you still have $4.2 million. Well, what am I supposed to do with that? Here, listen. Why is it so important to not take too much out in the early years? Why is it so important that you keep a governor on your spending? Even if they're good years. Because bad years are coming. Good years supplement the bad years. I think the hardest thing for us, of anything we do, I would rather walk through into 2008, 2009 again than I care to walk with people who won't stop spending, who spend too much and they're running out. We know they're running out and they just won't stop for whatever reason. And they make up whatever reasons. Next year will be better. Next year, something really magnificent will happen. Next year, you know, when housing prices go up and my house triples in value, then I'll sell it and downsize. Maybe next year, when things get better in Tamarack, I'll sell that extra cabin. You know, we're not going to sell the place in McCall because that's where the grandkids come back to. I get all that. But they're getting old and feeble and our brains fade and all these things. We just don't do as well, right? It isn't good. It's not fun. But you know what's even worse, right? Is to be out of money and old. Way worse. Way worse. Or you're rolling around in your grave and your younger bride is out of money. That doesn't sound like good stuff either. Look, it's not a guilt thing. It's just tough. And so as we look at all of those, the spending and how much comes out, it is, you know what the number is in my mind? We feel really good about this. 5. Now, the number is really 5.5. but not when markets are at all-time highs. And that's not a prediction of the market coming down. It's just a simple statement that when you dump your $1 million in now, why don't we take a 10% haircut for a normal, certain to occur over and over again all the days of our life, market correction, before we start considering that to be our number, which really means 5 of the million, right? It's the same mathematical thing. It's 5.5 of 900,000 is the same as 5 of a million. Why is that higher than the 4? Is because I think that you can actually intelligently decide what to trim and take money out of over the years. It doesn't have to be straight across the board. It's certainly not all going to be in the S&P. This is just a wild example. You see, it depends. Markets fluctuate. Depends on the day you retire. So hitting the number is not the question. Hitting the number and withdrawing it correctly is the question. And when we tie up money into annuities, and again, I'll talk about this in our education segment next hour. When we tie up our money in annuities, it does one of two things. If you're in a fixed annuity today, you're tying up the money for the rest of your life at the lowest interest rates of your life. No inflation adjustment, no counting on inflation. In a time when people are living longer and longer and longer, healthier lives, it just makes no sense. You will run out of lifestyle. Yeah, you have a guaranteed check coming in that isn't enough. The real return on that is too low. And the other annuities lie about what the returns are, and I'll go into that in more detail later. But we have to be very careful. We have to grow this money. It has to grow to have a growing stream of income. And so as our earlier caller, Jim, had pointed out, teasing me a little bit, some people shouldn't be in the market trying to get me going. Everybody has to. Unless you have $1 billion. And you're old, and you don't care if it runs down. You see, even people with $1 billion do care. That's why they invest and keep investing, because they'd rather have be able to build a library or a building at a college, leave money for their heirs, than just have it wash away in inflation. 5.5. Interesting. We obviously talk about this a good bit, and we'll talk some more. If you have any questions on it, shoot them over. It's 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We're going to be right back. Please do ring us up.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. With Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436-580-KIDO. Yeah, it's interesting to me as we look at Apple, right? Because it's such a incredible dominant company. And all the pros said coming into it, as again, we talk about over-trading things all the time. It's craziness. But heading into this big announcement is absolute certainty on the street, so to speak. Everybody knows. As soon as Apple announces, the stock price, it just does it every time. Any new product, you know, the Apple, the iPhone 4, iPhone 5, iPhone 6, the tablet, the mini tablet, the bigger tablet, whatever. Everybody's all hyped up coming into it, and then they blow up the stock. Okay, well, that has happened before when people were very disappointed. However, what people miss is that on average, each upgrade of the cell phone has, in fact, sent the stock up 30% a year later. So I guess for 3 days or a day or what have you, or 3 minutes in this case, because the stock opened up, and then it went down. It was up like 4 points, and then it went down. Down for the day like, you know, a dollar or something. Like, oh, you know, from some post-trading high. Or, you know, during the announcements. And then the next day it turned around and went up. And up. And it's just amazing because we get into this idea, again, where it's just, it's real simple, isn't it? Own the great companies. Own them. Invest in them. Don't trade them. And see, when we fully understand, and again, time out, disclaimer, I'm not trying to get you to buy Apple. I don't know what your portfolio looks like. I think it's totally inappropriate for most people to own any stocks. They need to own stocks in a mutual fund. They need to own a mutual fund, not individual stocks. Because they just don't even, they just can't, they can't relate to them. They can't make it work. It just freaks them out. If it's working really good, then they want to buy more. They want to own too much. If it isn't working, they want to shoot themselves. It's just silliness. Or one bad stock or a few bad stocks and takes them out of the whole market game. It's not good. And people don't even watch. Don't even know what to watch. But we look at, with Apple, you look at it and you say, this is amazing how much cash they generate. I don't know anything about technology except it's incredible that I can push a button on this thing. And yeah, I have an iPhone. I finally upgraded to the 5 a few months ago. I mean, I talk to it. You know, I can tell Siri I love her and she'll respond to me. It's stunning. I want to eat a pizza. Here's 5 places within a block or a mile, whatever. It's astounding. And that's just like stupid stuff you can do with it. I can even talk on mine. Don't know if you can, but I can talk on mine. It's amazing what they do. But you think about this, and they keep putting on more and more features that we all take for granted and need. Or think we need. But as this evolves, it also, what we don't understand for Apple, is that now are they profitable with this? Oh, amazingly. Do they basically control the discussion of this industry? Yeah, they do. Can you believe the coverage they had for their announcements? You couldn't buy that with $1 billion of advertising. Everybody wants it. Everybody, everywhere, is excited about every product they come out with. It's astounding. But I also know that they've created this incredible interconnected group of phones, the cloud, the not just phones, the tablets, the Macs. Their environment is all closed. People feel safe there, technologically safe. They love it there. They want to buy their music there. They want to buy every device they come out with. All the time. And you can tell them, well, the XYZ company sells a better one for less. Uh-huh. Yeah, good for them. I love my, have you seen my phone? This is awesome. We love the simplicity and the feeling safe within that environment. We're trapped. We're trapped in their biosphere. We are. People don't want to leave. So we don't care what's better out there. We don't care if it's cheaper. I like it in here. It's safe in here. I feel safe here. I don't get viruses. All that stuff is important to me. And apparently it's a lot less important to me than it is to a whole lot of people. And a whole lot of people just love the whole new, all new shiny stuff. I want the new 6. I can't wait for my upgrade to come. I can't wait to try out the watch. I want to pay for stuff on my phone. I mean, they love the new technology. And that's Apple. Built the industry, the whole thing. Until that changes, I own Apple. I don't trade Apple. And watching this kind of nonsense, not only is it wrong, it's wrong thinking for the average person. Don't trade. Don't trade them. Hey, you want to own it, you know, you own these things on a pullback. That's all. But it's back to it. But boy, was Apple amazing this week. Amazing. All right, we've got to take a quick break. Final break this hour. And we do, come on, give us a phone call here for crying out loud. It's 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-KIDO is our number. You know, hey, I appreciate that it's, you know, summer, the Broncos are about to play today and stuff like that. But I tell you, you guys are not holding up your end of the bargain. So I'm telling you what, next hour, I expect some phone calls, okay? And that number is 580-KIDO. Actually, somebody is answering that call right now, so thank you very much. And we do want and need your calls. All right, so while we're loading up that call real quick here before we get run out of time, this is very interesting to me. And I wanted to touch on this a little bit. It's about the, you know what, I'll talk about this in the next hour, but it's interesting to watch these large pension funds change directions for how they're doing their investing now. You know, it was all about doing some of these alternatives and things, which have not worked out well at all. And some of their real risky stuff has really hurt them, like CalPERS, who was supposed to be the great pension fund in California, really running on hard times. We'll talk about that in the next hour. Right now, let's go to Paul in Meridian. Paul, thank you for answering the call to make a call.
Hi, Dave. How are you today?
I'm awesome. Thank you.
Good. You mentioned John Deere. What about GE? That's a company that I just don't understand. It seems like, you know, they pay a 5% dividend. They hang around $25 or $30 a share for, what, 10, 15 years? They have a lot of cash. They're involved in all kinds of things, but the stock just doesn't go up.
Yeah, well, actually, it has now. Remember, it cratered at 6, and that was with, because they had so many issues with the financial side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but Paul, in general, I do agree with you. It's just not one that's totally hated. That's really, I'm not saying it's not. It's one I own, have owned, and I've been fortunate to add to it at very, very low dollar amounts. But you see, when we're talking about a move from 6 to 25, that's not nothing. Now, I grant you, that's at the dead bottom. So if we're talking about a more normalized $12, $15, it still is up less than I would have thought, less than many. They have restructured the company. I think you have to probably toss the CEO out. I really do. I mean, I've never been anti-Jeff Immelt at all. I know some people are, but I'm not. I don't. I thought, well, he came in at a very difficult time after a big run. But the truth of the matter is he's been there a long time, and the stock has not done well. The company has not functionally done as well. And it's probably time to get some new people in there. But they've restructured the company. It's all industrial. And, Paul, here's the issue right now, okay? This is the issue. Right now, the world is slowing down. I think if you have more growth than the industrials like GE, which is a pure industrial play now, are going to really zoom. So it's not the kind of company, if you're a stock trader, that's going to you're going to want to own right now any more than you want to own Deere or these others. So I agree with you. It's an interesting holding. It pays a good dividend and has been raising it very dramatically.
About Apple. I know it's an expensive stock for a lot of people, but I always try to find...
Paul, hang on 1 second, pal. I'm sorry. We're going to run out of time here. Fox News is coming up right now. You hold. I'll talk to you off air. We'll talk to you in the next hour, folks. Hang on.
Looking for inspiration? Or wonder if God is really there to help you in every time of need? If so, tune in and find answers on the Christian Science Sentinel Radio Edition. Hear people testify to the power of prayer and God's ever-presence. That's Sentinel Radio. Tune in for the good news.
Tune in this Sunday morning at 8 o'clock on 580 KIDO. sponsored by the Christian Science Churches of the Treasure Valley.
Dennis Dillon Nissan's bottom line model year-end clearance is on, where you can choose from over 300 new Nissans at model year-end closeout prices. New 2014 Nissan Versa starting at $10,995, or new Sentras, $15,995. Even new Altimas start at $17,999. And you can take up to $7,500 off Muranos and Pathfinders. Plus, available 0% financing up to 72 months during Dennis Dillon Nissan's model year-end clearance. The beginning of Auto Row, 8727 Fairview Avenue, Boise. All prices plus tax selling to the docking of $299.08.
Welcome and thank you for joining us. Hour number two of Money Matters upcoming. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only, not this station. They are not the opinions of my broker-dealer. We will occasionally talk about an individual stock as an example to whatever point we're trying to make. It's not a show about trying to buy or sell. It's we're trying to think through problems, questions. Our behavior is the single biggest determinant of investment results. And we talk about that all the time. I'm not going to dive into that right now. I'm just going to say it's all about how you behave. Everything else is just noise. It's noise to sell your eyeballs to something else. I mean, really, seriously, we're going to, well, Jim, what do you think about IOM stock? Oh, this is awesome. Idea. Really? Seriously. No research, no looking, just maybe a general, oh, love the industry, whatever. And what if we don't like it tomorrow? The very next day. It's just silliness. It's absolutely nothing more than selling eyeball views. All right. Our education segment today. I have so many questions all the time about annuities. Why can't we do that? Because they're sold on the radio. They're sold everywhere. They're sold everywhere. And why don't we? Why can't I have stock market returns? Stop telling me I can't have that without risk. I want no risk. I want guarantees, Dave. Yeah? Here's the guarantee. You will not get stock market returns without risk. I guarantee it. Guarantee that to be true. So everything else everybody says when they say things like that is that I'm done talking. I don't want to try to decipher what's true and what's not true. I wonder if the person is now. I mean, I know what they told me before was not true. So let me think. I wonder if now what they're saying is true or not. No, we're done talking. I don't want exaggerations. I want disclosures. Okay, here's a fact about annuities. I should write them because then it would be worth, if we just shifted, let's say 25%, which, of course, if you go to an annuity seminar, they think you should put 90% or 100% of your money into them. But let's suppose we only took 25% of our clients into this product that gave us upside returns, and we're too stupid. I know Warren Buffett doesn't own them. I don't know why Goldman Sachs doesn't just shift all of Goldman Sachs money and all their client money into something that gives market returns without market risk. I can't figure it out, how we're just so stupid. But if we did do that, since they pay around 10%, I've seen 20%, believe it or not, but let's call it 10. 10% commissions. So if we shifted that, oh, yeah, that would be about a $15 million payday. $15 million. And we wouldn't have to work anymore. That's why I saw the illustration. Okay, fine. Here, look. Here's one in front of us. Okay? This client came in and got sold something they didn't fully understand. Of course, that's what annuities are. I don't fully understand them. So here, buy it. And since they're not regulated by FINRA and the people that sell them are not CFPs, certified financial planners, hey, they don't have to disclose stuff because insurance laws, at least in the state of Idaho, they don't care. The insurance department, the state of Idaho, doesn't care. Doesn't care about old people. They don't. They obviously don't. They don't even hold hearings on these things. It's not like you have to rewrite the laws. You can borrow other states that are a little bit less lenient. But here's one right here that has 14 years. I wouldn't be allowed to sell this, but it's 14 years surrender charge. It's not the worst I've seen. But here is a time issue date. It was issued, meaning the initial deposit was put in November of 2002. November 2002. Now, I know this is ancient history, but I'm telling you, this is after the internet bubble burst. And you know the market bottomed in October of 2002? I mean, I'm just saying, you couldn't pick a better time to put the money in. So what the S&P did since then, okay, putting the same amount of money in there, it grew to $243,000. $243,000. Now, this one happened to have a bonus on it, meaning they gave you like $10,000 right up front. So they put in $132,000. They gave them $10,000. This is free, and they didn't have to pay anybody anything. It was really cool, right? So they theoretically put in $143,000 into the S&P 500. So they now today have $143,000 from $132,000. Unbelievable. It doesn't go up at all. They've only taken out one time, $12,000. So today they have $143,000 net put in of $100,000, $99,900, doing the same thing in the S&P 500 on the exact same day is $243,000. Not 143, 243,000. You're right. You couldn't lose, but you also couldn't win because the gains are capped all the time. And so when people are asking me about the volatility of markets, and again, I have to reiterate and stress that this is so hard to see in your mind when you see the market going up 10% a year and they tell you, hey, you know, you get all that, you're going to get like 8% a year, you know, with some of the fees and costs inside, but you get 8%. Instead of 10, then we see 8 every year. And what we don't understand is the 10, which is the long-term average of the market since 1926, or for 30 years, or for 38 years, or for 43 years. In other words, it's a long-term average all the time. It's 10. But the way we see that is 10. But here's what you need to understand. Of all the years, the single-year periods since 1926, only 5 of them have even been between 8% and 12. 6% of the time. 1 year in 19 is the market normal in our mind. It's always way above or way below. And if you cap the way above, if like last year, which did 30%, you didn't get that? You get 8? You lose. That's how you wind up with 143,000, and you're still trapped in this, by the way. You still can't get out. Let's see, what is it? Right, only $7,800 charge. Still. And we're 12 years into this. 12 years into it, it's still an $8,000 charge to get out. And it's $100,000 behind what the S&P 500 did. Oh, yeah. And guess what? We did go through 2008, and the market got cut in half. And this product, theoretically, I'm sure it didn't go down during that time. I'm sure it didn't. But does that sound, I mean, this is just a side-by-side thing. This is a real deal contract, side-by-side. Does that sound to you like you get stock market returns minus $100,000 per 100 you put in without risk? The without risk part is true, but it's certainly not true that you get stock market returns. You do not. Markets give you a lot, and then they take away. They don't do normal. They don't do normal. And they always sold in fear. The market's high. And here, this analyst over here. And the dollar's going to collapse. Remember the dollar going to collapse in July, on July 1st? Remember that? Oh, yeah. It didn't happen. Oh, yeah, that's right. Here it is, right here. That's the dollar. I forgot. Are they still taking dollars in Eagle? I can't remember. I think they took dollars. That's right. I played golf yesterday. I lost my bet. I paid off in dollars. Suckers. Suckers. They took my dollars. They did. I got to keep my rubles and my yuan because these suckers took dollars. Really? But that's the way it is. It's constantly. Constant jibber-jabber. Owning the great corporations of the world. Yes, the prices move and change, but it's such a big price to pay. Your money's tied up. It's locked up for decade and longer at amazing cost. I'm not saying never, ever. If interest rates rise, let's go do a normal annuity if you're 80 years old and you need some stable income, but not at today's interest rates. And you don't need to play games like this. Very, very high commissions. And I know you don't pay them. Really? You really don't think you pay them? Because it's not disclosed that you do? Because you don't actually write a check? Because we pretend you don't pay it? You don't think that the consumer pays? Very high commissions. It can't work. It can't work. And there's so much noise about them. So much noise. Please, please, please be careful. I want to quickly shift gears here. Because we're talking about this the interesting call, and it's such a good piece for our education segment. Hey, if you have a question, you know, if you have any questions, want further information, hey, shoot us an email. Give us a call here right now. 580-KIDO. Shoot us an email at Petzo Financial. Call us if you want. You know these things can't do what they promise. You know it. Your grandmother, who knows nothing about finance, knew that. There was no such thing as a free lunch. There is not. All about fear. Market's too high. Market's too high. Market's too high. You know what's going on in Russia? You know what's going on in the Middle East? You know what's going on with oil prices? I just saw this guy over here. This guy here says the dollar's going to collapse. Yammering on and on. All right. Done. Time out. Another piece. Paul, at the end of the first hour, had a great question and started to ask on Apple and a higher price stock, right? And one of the things, though, with it was an interesting subtext, and we talked a little bit off air, and that is, what about buying the suppliers to Apple, right? The ones that make the glass and the chips inside and make the gadget what it is, right? How it works. Okay? And that can be a great strategy. It's one of the reasons I own Qualcomm, is for the guts of all cell phones. And by the way, when we talk about individual stocks here, I think you need to understand that the vast majority of my investments are in mutual funds managed by really smart people that go all over the globe. Okay? It's not smart to do a bunch of individual stocks. It's an arrogant statement. Okay? All right. But we're talking about it. So what about the suppliers? What an interesting thought. And that is an interesting thought. Here's why a differential, in my mind, with Apple versus, say, the whole cell phone industry, ex-Apple. Apple has got its own environment, as we talked about, right? And so everybody loves being in this environment, right? Their own cloud, the whole thing, every gadget connected, everybody likes that. That's different. Here's the other thing. Everybody wants to be with Apple. Because they're going to sell a lot, which means the suppliers get beat up a lot. They do. So, yes, I think you should look at some of the suppliers, absolutely, of all cell phones. But in this case, I do want to own Apple, not the suppliers. I want to own the whole piece, not individual pieces. But it's a fascinating question, and I think many times you do, and you always do, I think, with a commodity, and you say, well, cell phones are a commodity. I don't think they are for Apple. I don't think they are. They command a premium price. That's not a commodity. So as we look at that, if you're in a commodity space, then I think you want to see that space grow, yes. But if you're, if you can't make money making the phones, then buy the people that make the glass on the phones and the chips inside and such. Okay? So very interesting point, Paul. Thank you very much. All right. Now, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, give us a call. Love to talk to you. Or shoot us an email. Dave@PetzoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. So, on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. 580 KIDO is our number. Come on, let's ring us up. Got to be some questions out there. Love to have phone calls. We really do. Before we get it all hunkered down for the Bronco game at 10 o'clock today. All right. And on also, if you prefer email, please do. Dave@PetzoFinancial.net. Here's an email. Good morning, Dave. On the flip side of spending too much, could you talk about required minimum distribution at age 70 and a half? Not there yet. 9 more years for me. Is there a formula, age, and money? How do I figure this out? Could you talk about this? Thanks. Absolutely. You know, the easiest thing to do when you get there is, it's age 70 and a half, you can always print out a chart because it's a standard chart. And really, all you have to do is Google it. RMD, required minimum distribution, bang, up it'll pop. It really is that easy. And then just go ahead and print it out and set it in a file or tape it to the side of your computer if you wish. But that will give you the divisor. And I believe the first year is 27.4. And that, what that simply means is you take the account balance on December 31st of the prior year, divide by that number, 27.4, and then it becomes 26.5 and so on and so forth, okay? You divide by that, and that's the amount you have to take out. That's it. Pretty simple. Add up all your IRAs, and that's what you have to take out. Now, here is the flip side, though. You maybe shouldn't wait 9 years. You don't have to wait and have your IRAs build up. We have literally seen, I think it's a chronic problem. I mean, it's a huge problem. But we've seen people with advisors. We've seen people with, in the past cases, the ones that make us scratch our heads. With advisors that are not taking any money out of IRAs or tax-deferred annuities. In other words, taxable money. And people are paying zero taxes. They're like in a no tax bracket, which means their heirs are going to inherit this and have to pay taxes on money that could be taken out slowly, carefully, at zero or very low tax brackets. So think about it on your own too. So you don't want to necessarily deplete all of your non-qualified assets or tax-free assets just to leave a whole bunch in the IRAs. Because now your flexibility of what you can take out or should take out is greatly diminished. What you want to try to do, we believe very strongly, is you want to balance the two. Now, I don't know, you're probably still working. 61's awful young. But when you do retire, you want to try to balance it out. And we've talked about this many, many times. You want to have diversified investments, yes, but you also want to have them tax-diversified, non-qualified as well as qualified. So when you're pulling it out, it's the same thing. Try to have a low tax bracket, not a no tax bracket. Low and low for life, if at all possible. Take it out of both. Don't leave yourself no option, but IRA money later. Now, there are reasons to do that. Let's say I have plenty of other income or plenty of income coming in, or I have a lot of non-qualified assets. And I still have a moderate tax bracket. And I want to give some money away. Aha. Okay, well, number one, if your children, grandchildren, whoever, are going to be receiving income and in lower brackets than you, of course that makes sense. Number two, give away your IRAs. If you have a choice, give away your cash, your Roths, you're non-qualified, to individuals. And give away to charities your qualified assets. Okay? So there are reasons to do all, but that's part of the whole financial planning part. But I've been absolutely stunned. We've just been floored lately. We actually had an argument with an accountant. The person was not paying any tax. None. None. Zero. Zero, zero, zero. Why, for years, have they been not taking money out of their IRAs? At least up to the 10% tax bracket? So it's not, don't wait necessarily forever, okay? Thank you, Mike. That's a great question. Appreciate it. I know it brings up a whole bunch, okay? Oh, hey, follow up here. And he found the calculator. Good. All right, and then there's a further question here, I guess. Maybe the rate of return, 10 years. I'll take a look at that later, okay, Mike? Thank you. But, yes, it's out there, and so just Google it, and you've got it. It's all ready to roll. It really, for those of you who really don't want to pull it up and wonder what this divisor thing is, think about it as a percentage. Roughly speaking, you take out about 3.7% the first year, slowly rising to 4, 4.5, 5. By the time you're about 80 years old, you have to take out about 5%. Okay, so that's why accounts tend to keep growing a little bit in normal-ish market conditions, meaning up markets. Okay. Because guess what? Here's the weird part. I know people don't think this way because, boy, the bad years do circle out or come to big focus in our minds, right? Most years are up. Most market years are up, flat out. Most of the time, the stock market is up. It's up. Most of the time. It just is. And we all run around worrying about it. And the average for your life is 10. 10. Which is 7% above inflation. Do you know what houses have done? Just an aside. Do you know what houses have done? I know. This is one marvelous investment. All these people, since 1950, you know, baby boom and all that stuff. Everybody's buying houses, changing them around and stuff like that. 1% above inflation. One. 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 That's what it's done. One. Not much, huh? Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It is time to give us a call. Please do. We've got to take a quick break here for Fox News. Give us a call with your questions. We'd appreciate it. Shoot us an email, dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk.
You want us to talk about? You know, I haven't had an education segment question in a long time. Just shoot those over to PetzoFinancial.com, and we can dig in. But that's what we try to do at the beginning of the second hour each week, is to really dig into something, to really learn about it, right? You know, and we've covered everything. Just to give you, a couple ideas, you know. How big are return our dividends in it? Should I be an active investor or passive? Do I use index funds? What's better? How much can I take out in retirement? How do you actually take money out in a retirement account without running out? How much can I take? These are just a few of the questions that people ask, and we try to dig in. You know, not everybody even knows what a stock is. We toss it around like everybody knows what stocks are. And yet you still hear people say, well, I don't own any stocks. Yeah, you do. They're inside your mutual funds. Oh, they are? Oh, like a mutual fund is a separate creature, right? I mean, some of these things we often take for granted, and so we'd love to cover them with you. And if it's a simple question, we'll just shoot you back a reply, okay? And by the way, when you do, if you really want your reply there, we need to have, sometimes they're very complex questions. You need to leave us your phone number if we need to follow up. Otherwise, we'll just shoot you back and say, you need to talk about it. Sometimes that's what happens. Excuse me. All right, now I've got to share this quote real quick before we jump on the phones, okay? This is a John Lennon quote, okay? Life is what happens while you are busy making other plans. Life is what happens while you're busy making other plans. I was sitting there one night and I saw that quote go across and I thought, okay, so I changed it a little bit, all right? I changed it. Returns are what happens while you fuss over things you can't control. And I believe Jim called in and added to that or got me thinking about it. I can't remember now. But if you did, Jim, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to steal your thunder. Returns are what happens while you fuss over things you can't control. It is. We sit here and gnash our teeth about all the problems in the world, all the fussiness, while the markets continue to march to all-time highs. Not just now. Always. And yes, they correct and they move back and we fuss a lot about those. And we miss all the money we make. 580-KIDO is our number. Let's go to Ken in Meridian. Ken, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, Dave. I had a few questions about your dispersal schedule. I had always heard 5%. Hearing you say, I think it was 3.7% the first year, slowly creeping to 4, slowly creeping to 5 is the first time I've heard that.
Yeah.
I had always done my projections based on a 5%.
No. Ken, real simple. Hold on, because it's all right. You just misheard. It is 5, okay? We even talked about both today. But I'm talking about the required minimum distributions.
I'm sorry.
Nope, that was somebody's question, and we talk about the divisors, because that's how it's phrased by the IRS in the
right.
table. But most people can relate to a percentage better than, yeah, you take the divisor in the first year, which is 27.4, and you divide by, what?
Okay,
but that's where the 3.5 goes up as we get older, okay?
Very good. I apologize. I've been doing chores around the house as I'm listening, so that's part of the problem.
No, it's all right.
My next question would be, how does a secure and traditional pension enter into this? My gut feeling would be that it allows you to take perhaps a little bit greater percentage from your investments in retirement if you have a secure and traditional pension.
Yes and no. Here's the problem. Sometimes I would agree basically, and you might be able to get away with that for the first couple of years, but long term, remember, a secure pension is also not going to be cost of living adjusted, at least not fully. Even the government pensions that have some cost of living adjustments, they're not keeping up with the pace of the real cost of living, are they?
Well, that's true.
And when we're talking about 20- and 30-year retirements, you are actually going to see that being a diminished amount, and so you're going to have to get more from your other investments to have the same overall.
Okay.
So if anything, I think it's one of those things you have to look at after the first couple of years to actually have – not only more than the 5.5, but we need to actually have less to make up later so you don't live at a lower lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. But so, I understand what you're saying, and because you're feeling more comfortable because some of it is, you know, guaranteed, and there it is, just coming in.
Yeah.
But be careful long term.
And, one last question. How do you account for inflation? And I'm sure it's a mix of how the markets do on a particular year, which may allow you to take a greater percentage in the following year, or perhaps if it's done poorly, causes you to retract a percentage or two. I'm assuming that's sort of how you function with inflation and the market performance.
You know, no. Not really, because the markets are so volatile. You can't take extra because they do 30%. You can't.
So you stick with that 5%.
Absolutely.
Whatever the performance is.
Well, you can do it differently, and different clients do. But most people want to know what a steady amount is. And one way to do that is what we call mad money accounts, and I'll just go real quickly with that, where people will say they'll take less than 5, maybe even 0, because they've got pensions. But once per year, they'll take a big chunk out, and plan on spending that on various like trips or what have you. I mean, big cool fun stuff.
Right.
Now that is really a cool thing to do, but then they may say, you know, when the market's down, I don't want to do it. We just don't want to take it that year. Or we want to take less. So if you have that kind of flexibility, then that's great. But many, many people get to retirement, and they really want to have $4,000 per month on the first of the month, period.
Right.
And so then we have to say that's fine, and we can't be sitting there going, okay, hey, by the way, Ken, we need you to send us back $10,000 because your account went down this year.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I need my four. I'm not sending you any. Right?
Okay.
So you can't have that kind of volatility.
Makes sense.
All right.
I agree. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
And go Irish.
All right. Good. All right. Take care. Thanks, Ken. And our number is 580-KIDO. Let's go to Paul in Boise. Paul, thanks for calling.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Hey, I love hearing you on a weekend. You keep saying this in the week.
Well, thank you.
So we're married, early 60s, pretty close to critical mass, but we're probably 85% or 90% stocks and REITs and things like that. Too much?
I don't think so, Paul. I don't. Here's the thing, though. If you're okay, look at what I would do is I'd look at the income generation. Is that working? Okay. And as far as the REITs go, are they publicly traded or non?
Yes.
Okay. Good. All right. So I do classify those more like stocks. Okay.
Right.
So I'm going to say you are in stocks. But are they dividend-paying stocks? Are they growth stocks? Are they almost all drawing some income for you?
Everything.
Everything. All right. I would diminish the growth side, okay, and have more income because it does stabilize your cash flow just a little bit, right?
Okay.
And are you saying are you there? You've got the critical mass. You're okay?
Yeah.
Is there enough income?
Pretty much.
Okay. If there's enough income, then you're not really having to sell off the assets, right? Okay.
But we're still working.
Oh, you're still working?
Yeah.
Oh, no. How long until retirement?
Seven, 8 years.
No. In this world, a zero interest rate.
Dave.
What's that?
I just heard a no from my wife. 7 more years, no.
All right. Well, that's a separate discussion. I'll let you two handle that, okay?
Sure.
But here's the deal. 7, 8 years from now, I don't care what the stock's bouncing around or doing, okay? You're not taking any principal out.
No.
So why do I want to put money into cash? Because you're making this decision. I want that money to lose a little bit of money to inflation every year. That's your investment decision on whatever piece you put there. Or I want to try to break even with inflation on a 10-year government bond and hope that I don't need that money for 10 years because otherwise I'm going to sell it at a loss if interest rates go higher. I don't like either of those choices. I think they're just silly. Or you're saying, hey, we're going to put some money in cash because I'm going to time the market. It's either or.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either an asset decision that I hate at this point in time because there is no earning on it. And the second piece is, hey, I think you can still find great dividend-paying companies, and why do I care? If Apple raises its dividend every year and keeps raising it, why do I care? Why do I care if it's at $100 or it's at $90 or it's at $130? It's the income piece as I hit retirement that's going to generate my income.
Okay. How about overweight and underweight?
Overweight, what everybody hates. What do they hate? Emerging markets.
Okay.
So overweight that slightly. Okay. It can get worse.
Sure.
We've got geopolitical issues, and if it gets worse, you want to be able to add more, not run. So add a little bit, but also I'd focus on some of the dividend payers over there. And there are actually funds that focus on that now too, okay, on income in emerging markets. Very interesting.
Okay.
So I would actually overweight there. I would also overweight, this is going to surprise you, but I would overweight growth. Growth has not performed as well as the multinational value. I wouldn't add to the big dividend payers right now as far as an overweight position. Not at all. They've made a big run and are at very high levels. I'm not worried about them. I'm not saying they're overpriced, but that's not an overweight time. They're not cheap.
Oh, yeah, no.
Okay?
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-KIDO. Hey, Dave. And, Mike, please hold. I'll get you right on the other side, but we've got to take a quick break here. And our number is 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. On 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and again, thank you very much. Particularly appreciate the phone callers. And we did have a full board, so if you caught a busy signal earlier trying to call in, call back. We've got a couple lines available. We're going to have a nice long segment right up until the Bronco game. So we're going to go right now to Dave. Dave, thanks for waiting. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, usually, Dave, I can't listen to you live, but I thought I'd call in since I can today.
Good.
Just wanted to clarify one point about annuities. I'm just going to say for simplicity, it's fixed, let's just say a fixed immediate annuity.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear lots of people say, well, I like that annuity because it pays 6% because I know I can only withdraw 4% from my IRA or whatever. Doesn't that 6%, just for clarity, normally include a return of principal amount?
Yes. Yeah, there's zero left when you die, or also some of them have a set period, like for 10 years. Well, so what? I mean, I can draw out 10% a year for 10 years on a zero interest account.
And so...
So you're right.
People make that comparison, and it's really normally an invalid comparison.
It's a totally invalid comparison. What you can say is what the internal return is, which is calculated by the insurance company, and you can certainly calculate it as well, based on life expectancy factors. And that's as simple as it can be. And also, commissions are built in, also a risk factor of longevity. The insurance company isn't going to take zero in profitability either. So there are all of these things are built into one. Dave, we did a comparison here. I did this with an annuity where the annuity was simply guaranteed to double for income purposes in 10 years. Okay, that's it. No, didn't state an interest rate, but doesn't that sound good? My income I can draw is 5% for life, and the amount I can draw on if I put $100,000 in 10 years from now is going to be $200,000, and I can do that for life. 5% for life on double the amount. Doesn't that sound like a really good return? And the answer is it's 3%. If you live for 20 years past your starting to draw date. So you have to live 30 years. And by the way, before you can draw the 5%, you have to be 72 years old. So you have to live to be 92 to get 3.25% interest on that kind of a deal. So they can be very misleading after you have to sit down and run the math.
Yeah, no one needs to convince me about the stock that, and I would think most annuities are a bad deal. You know, if you just look at 10% in the stock market, use the rule of 72. There you go, it doubles 10.
Well, it does, but then you also have the capital, and you aren't drawing at 5%. The list goes on. Remember, you haven't drawn anything for the 5 years, for the 10-year period. Anyway, all the mathematics are not all that complicated because you can run them, but you have to understand where they come from. And not all annuities are bad. They used to be better. But nowadays, with the lowest interest rates of our lives, and then all these hokey annuities where they put caps on and you only get a small percentage of the return of the S&P with little understanding and total lack of disclosure and 10, 15, 20-year surrender periods, I can't get my mind wrapped around how this is good. And I don't recommend people go to annuity sales seminars or listen to annuity sales pitches of any kind, whether radio, TV, or anything. So it doesn't make sense to me right now. It's not the right environment for annuities.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Dave, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Have a great day. Bye-bye. And let's go to a very patient caller. Mike, are you still hanging with us?
I'm sorry, did you say Mike?
I did, yes, sir. It's you.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I've been fucking around with some mortgage REITs and business development corporations in the last 10, 12 months, and they seem to do real well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty aware that they're pretty riskful. And my wonderments as to what your observations or thoughts are, because I know it's riskful. This is mad money. If I lose it, it's not going to affect my lifestyle.
Well, You said a lot right there. Look, if you're comfortable in that space, and yes, it pays out more, and I don't think that they're super high risk either. It's just not a lot of growth. What you have to understand with most of them, and you do have to be very careful. There are some really good operators in that space, and there's not good operators there. So be careful, please, and just look at the long range history of what the net asset value has done. But what you're usually doing is you're going to have a much higher return than the overall market. But because of defaults, you are going to have a constant slight erosion of the net asset value in a BDC. And for those of you who are wondering what a BDC is, it's a business development corporation. And they loan money to small businesses that can't get traditional money from banks. That's the typical BDC. Now, sometimes they'll take little equity kickers, and if you're doing your homework really well, you start to understand that inside of that BDC, they may have the ability to hold or even grow their net asset value if some of these equity kickers, warrants, options, pay off. And so that could be part of the price of the loan. Be careful of the higher yielding ones. The market's already telling you there are issues with that, but I would definitely look at a 10-year track record and find out what its net asset value has done. That's what you really want to do. And secondly, everybody's chasing yield, so be careful now. They're chasing yield and have bid these up to higher prices. So I'm not a big buyer right now, but I love the big standard bearers, and you can look at private equity as well. The KKRs and things like that are paying nice dividends, and they have nice businesses underneath. So I feel better getting a little bit less there and not having my NAV erode every year.
Thank you.
Mike, thank you. Have a great day. And thank you for your patience waiting online. So, again, thank you to all the phone callers today. Appreciate it. Hey, we've got a couple minutes left, and I just want to wrap up a couple of thoughts here. When we are thinking about this, and I've talked so much about how fear sells, And that's what annuities are tapping into, is our fear. It's also this idea or premise of the mathematics that you have to go in and look. You know, it's just not a good return to have a product that will start paying you 10 years from now 5%. And zero today, just because you start waving a flag of a doubling of the amount of money you put in. Do the math. Do the math. Find out what the values are. Do your homework. And don't buy things because somebody's telling you how the world is ending. Yeah, as I look at so many of these things over the years and what people are worried about, what they were worried about 30 years ago, and what they're worried about 20 years ago and 10 and today, and people screaming and yelling about how the dollar is going to collapse on July 1st. And this is what people choose to believe. They don't find out. They don't go and dig in and find out that the people they're getting advice from have never been right. But the people they're getting advice from are not licensed, registered representatives that have to are bound by law to give full disclosure. They don't even check out FINRA's broker check to see if there are complaints. They don't check out and see and say, hey, my advisor, who's your advisor? It works at an insurance company. Nothing wrong with that. But are they licensed? Are they certified financial planners? It's amazing where we get that. Now, everybody, have a great weekend. Go Broncos. Enjoy this wonderful fall weather. We'll talk to you live next week.
Idaho's Community Bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Pezzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Pezzo and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.